The Monologue.
Well, it turns out that teachers don't want to get back into the classroom. We start this hour with a story from Como News that says, with just a few weeks before the start of the new academic year, there are a whole bunch of school districts across the state that are struggling to hire teachers. They've got hundreds of job openings for different schools and different districts all across the country, and they're saying we're headed for a staffing crisis. And I suppose we shouldn't be shocked that we're seeing a staffing crisis here, as we've been seeing a staffing crisis in pretty much every single industry. What I find to be especially curious is, in this case, you had a whole bunch of workers in, we'll call it an industry, that pretty much got everything that they wanted. Up until the end, right, they got everything that they wanted. They got an increase in funding. They were treated as if they were heroes. They were able to work from home despite that not being necessary or the right move for students. And the only thing that they wanted that they didn't get was permanently being able to work remotely. You look at what they're doing, and, you know, they say that salary is still an issue, and they, you know, the National Education Association, the union, will point to national numbers, which is not fair, because when you look at places like Seattle or Bellevue or really just Western Washington, you see a huge salary bump when you compare it to some other regions. So the whole idea that this is about a lack of pay is absurd. There's a quote in here from one of the in this Como TV piece, from one of the union leaders. It's the National Education Association president, Becky Pringle. And she's out there saying, quote, "We saw teachers are living out of their cars, teachers who couldn't afford to take care of their own families. That is absurd." And I can tell you right now, again, even though Western Washington is a little bit different in the sense of pay, it's higher than what you'll get in Eastern Washington, generally speaking. But the average salary of a teacher here is $77,000. $77,000. On top of that, when you add benefits to it, it gets upwards of $88,000, or maybe just a little under $88,000. So they're making good money. Certainly they're making money in this region that's over the average. This I can see in certain other areas if that is not the reality, but that is the reality here in Washington. So there's got to be something else at play here, that this can't just be about money. I just refuse to believe that. And by the way, pointing to teachers who are currently employed complaining versus claiming that people don't want to get into the industry because of the lack of pay, those are two separate arguments to me. It seems to me that we've gone away from this notion that kids matter, they're our future, and you have to have a certain kind, not just a personality, but a willingness to make some sort of sacrifices to take on this job. Sacrifices maybe a little bit on the pay side, at least certainly historically that's been the case. But remember, you also get summers off. And as I say this, I hear Peyton in my ear saying, "I wish I was a teacher. I'd be getting really good money, and I would get my summers off, plus some time in the spring." Well, maybe we can arrange that, Peyton. He's always complaining about a lack of... you're leaving to become a teacher now? Oh, okay. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. We're here in Dallas for CPAC day number 2. We've got my panel coming up in a little bit. We'll play that at the bottom of the hour. The video, by the way, will be available online at facebook.com/JasonRantzShow or on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRantz. Now this...
The interview.
Big news. Senator Kyrsten Sinema decided, yes, she's going to go along with this social spending and taxation bill that's supposedly going to cure
media to the, you know, to the syphilis that would have been the full-scale BBB. It's 1/12 of what they wanted. And the memo's gone out that this is the most transitional change since the New Deal.
That's the curious part for me of... I get that they're constantly overselling and under-delivering, but isn't that a good thing in this case?
Yeah, well, it is. It's just, I'm just so bored by their hackneyed attempts at propaganda. I mean, they're not even good at it. Is there anybody out there going, "This is the greatest achievement in all of history. Liberalism has been validated." No, no one's doing that.
Did Mitch McConnell get played here?
Oh, Mitch McConnell is getting played and played and played. As I wrote in my town hall column of Thursday, where I am a senior columnist, when I'm not the author of We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, if I don't mention my book, the publisher will not release my family.
Oh, no.
But I wrote in the column, is Mitch, is Cocaine Mitch blowing it? So I got a nice pun.
I got the pun.
You got it?
I got it. right? Took me a while for
it's like Hunter Biden.
Yeah.
But no, he's losing a step. Look, this is a guy who is a parliamentary knight fighter par excellence in his prime. He really, you have to, he annoys the hell out of me. But you have to assess people accurately. And this is a guy, if it was not for him, we would not be where we are on guns and regulation and abortion with the Supreme Court, because he had the stones to keep that disgrace Merrick Garland off the Supreme Court. We owe him credit. But this is politics, Jason. And what have you done for me lately? He screwed up on the gun compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is not a single Republican who voted for a single Republican senator to go to Congress and pass gun control. None. Yet he allowed it to happen. A smarter, more disciplined McConnell would not. He just, nope, you're not doing it. I mean, he managed to keep together a 50-senator coalition that ran from, you know, Miracle Whip Mitt and Susan Collins all the way up to Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. And he kept them together again and again and again. So he deserves credit, but he's slipping. He's got the gun compromise, and now he's been played.
Do you wonder if it's slipping versus maybe it is intentional and there is a strategy that we're just not seeing? I don't know what that strategy might
be. Yeah,
if
it is, it's way too subtle for me.
I always think of that, where when something that just doesn't make sense from someone who generally knows how to operate, you wonder.
Yeah, look, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I don't understand, and he's certainly not making it clear. It just looks like he's weak, and frankly, he looked foolish.
Yeah.
He lets his CHIPS Act pass, and then this BBB thing comes out a couple hours later. And I think Chuck Schumer at one point would have been afraid to do something like this to him. He would have said, he'll get me. I better not burn that bridge. I'll play tough, but I won't do something that will embarrass him.
Does he feel safe because he knows it won't happen after the midterms? I know that there's more shifting polls that seem to indicate, at least on the Senate side, that we're not going to see a red wave.
No, I don't buy that. First of all, the polls were wrong from 2010.
We looked at the polls when they were positive and said that a red wave was coming.
Now, I think we felt it was coming because of the correlation of forces, and the polls just kind of supported it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust the polls. You can't trust the polls. I do trust $6 gas. Okay? And I trust what I hear people talking about, because I don't live in Washington. I live in California. Exactly a normal place.
The price declined in a historic fashion. I love that talking point.
I know.
That is quite possibly my favorite one.
Yes, the price has doubled, but it's gone down 10%.
Yeah, but where is it?
Where's my parade?
It's ridiculous. But yeah,
their messaging is terrible.
I will say that Washington State, we clearly did not see any kind of red wave support in this last primary, and we got a hose because of Roe v. Wade. How much do you think that is ultimately going to hurt Republicans in certain districts?
I don't think it's going to... look, nobody who votes...
It undoubtedly hurt in Washington.
Well, I don't think anybody who votes based on Roe v. Wade was going to vote Republican anyway. Now, will it get some people who weren't going to vote off their feet? In 100 days... Maybe. Maybe not. Washington, like my own state of California, is kind of a weird state. You have very, very blue urban areas, very, mm-hmm. very red rural areas. If you maximize the rural stuff, will that balance out the urban stuff? And the answer is probably no in both those states, yeah. as we've seen. Will they use... I mean, you know, is the Washington legislature going to ban abortion? I don't think so. So what the hell do they care?
Yeah. Well, it's all virtue signaling. Well, I do wonder if what happened in Kansas with the abortion bill or vote, I wonder if that will calm everyone down on the left to say, maybe we don't have to go crazy, because if in Kansas it could happen, then it's not going to threat here.
I think the Kansas thing is probably the most interesting result of the elections. I don't know what to make of it. I think it was a weird law. It was not well understood. And frankly, you know, many Americans are anti-abortion, but not ban all abortions
exactly.
all the time.
But that's the point.
And you know, the sooner the states figure out what they're going to do and do it. Guys like Glenn Youngkin, he's like basically, well, you know, the Senate, you know, the legislature's going to vote for 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And so is Ron DeSantis. Get it done. Get it behind you.
Kurt Schlichter is the elder statesman over at townhall.com, or the senior columnist. Give the book a plug.
It's because I'm 700 years old. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America. I have done 100 hits on this thing, Jason. I mean, literally. If I talk about this book anymore, I'm literally going to catch fire. But you all ought to go buy it because it's funny and it's cool and there's history and humor and I'm mean to liberals. So just buy it.
Yeah, I mean, just the meanness is reason alone.
There's a lot of meanness.
Kurt is a very mean person.
I'm not nice to my enemies.
He really isn't.
Kurt's I want to make them sad.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Now this.
The Interview.
Back here at the booth at CPAC, Cass Patel joining me, former senior director for counterterrorism for the National Security Council, friend of the show. I want to just dive into the threat of China because this is one of those stories where I think Republicans are caught a little bit off guard. You have Nancy Pelosi going to Taiwan. Everyone wants to call it out as basically a walking press release. It was a press junket. We don't want to give in to China. But we also don't want to needlessly poke at them. What was your just big general take?
Well, as a national security guy and as former chief of staff with the DOD, you know, this is kind of what we do. We put the mission first and we don't politicize national security. And this is what Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi have done. Just last week, the spokesman at the White House for the president came out and said, quote, "We do not support an independent Taiwan," end quote.
Yeah.
2 days ago, Nancy Pelosi lands. Mind you, the number three in charge of the United States government, the number three to be present, the Speaker of the House lands in Taiwan after that statement as if that wasn't bad enough, and then says and announces the indefinite support of an independent Taiwan. How can Americans be taken seriously on the global stage when our leadership, who's supposed to be on the same team, can't even get it right?
Well, and that's the thing. I don't understand why she did this to the Biden administration. Right. I would understand why an opposition party might.
Right.
It would be wrong to do an unethical. Okay, but at least I understand.
Yeah.
Why
on the same team?
Yeah, but why would they do that here? What am I missing?
I don't think. Here's my guess, and I could be totally wrong. They probably thought they were on the same page.
Really?
And look at these people speak nowadays. I mean, literally, Biden's not even announcing most policies because he can't get the entire sentence out. And look, I don't wish ill will of Nancy Pelosi, but she's not exactly able to communicate with alacrity these days anymore either. And so they're probably moving at 1,000 miles an hour, and literally maybe they forgot. Now, that's giving them a pass.
They shouldn't get a pass.
They shouldn't get a pass because they've been doing this for, 50 years together? Literally together at the United States Congress. And this just hurts that China is stealing our information on places like TikTok. They're invading our national security apparatus like to no end. And what do? We just sit there and take it. And that's the problem. Xi Jinping knows he can dole it out, and we're not going to do
anything. And I think just about the military response, if we were ever to get into a hot war with China, which I don't, we're not going to, not over this certainly. I don't know if our military is ready from a traditional standpoint. We know from the standpoint of recruitment, there's significant issues.
Yeah.
And then I wonder, is this actually a traditional war that we would ever get into, or is it more going to be done digitally? Are we prepared for that? Are we prepared for the hackers? Are we prepared for bringing down certain portions of our infrastructure? And I don't know the answer.
No, I mean, I sort of do as a former deputy director of National Intelligence and then chief of staff. You learn the importance of not just the national security mission, but the intelligence that undergirds it, right? And if you have your government, this is what we did under Trump. He prioritized national security interests, targets, Russia, China, Iran, terrorists, hostages, right? Taking on the bad guys and shifting our focus to them. What Joe Biden has done is come in and said, oh, what did Trump do? We're going to do the opposite. Yeah. So he's prioritized us out of national security. The Department of Defense's number one focus at DOD, which I used to run, is climate change. They introduced a campaign plan at the Department of Defense, the first one under Biden, for climate change. And this shows you what happens when you're looking at the weather instead of looking at China.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people are saying don't have the conversation and make it a part of a grander plan.
Exactly.
But it can't be your number one. That's not the world that we live in.
You're
it
totally
makes
right.
no sense.
And it's just, it's, and I know a lot of the intelligence officials and military guys still on the ground working, and they want to do the collection mission and the operations that we train them to do, and they know that it. But their chain of command, their political chain of command, says no.
Yeah.
Stop looking at those options. I bet you Brittany Griner wishes Donald Trump and I were in command right now.
How does Biden handle Brittany Griner?
I mean, he's already handled it terribly.
Yeah.
He offered up the Merchant of Death. Sounds you don't like make these guy. Things up, right? This guy literally is convicted and sitting in federal prison in America because he conspired to kill Americans. And he goes, oh, you can have him. And I'm always for all options on the table. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of hostage negotiations. President Trump brought 54 American hostages home, record-breaking, and didn't lose a life, single life, right? And Joe Biden's like, oh, here, and then just tell us what you want. And they come back over the top and they're like, we're not doing that. We want more.
Yeah.
And
it's horrible negotiations.
It's horrible negotiations, puts us in a position of weakness. And tragically, whatever you think of Brittany Griner, it leaves an American citizen in prison in Russia possibly for a decade.
She should not be there for that. Regardless of even,
sure,
I will concede she brought a ton of hash oil, whatever. You don't go to jail for nine years.
It's insane.
That's ludicrous.
But it's leverage. The Russians are smart. Putin is evil. And they know they can leverage this administration.
Exactly.
So they want the Victor Boots out. They want other people out. They want to basically denigrate our national security even further. And the results are on full display. And, you know, we've got a playbook on how to get hostages out, but they don't want to use it.
We also have a book called The Plot Against the King. How do you like that seamless integration
into
the show?
I love it. Thank you,
Jason. So take me through you're getting into the market, which it's very valid and growing, of children's books based within sort of a conservative lens.
Yeah. So The Plot Against the King, I was a lead investigator for Russiagate under Devin Nunes, and the world now knows what happened, right? But children didn't, and we didn't want to politicize it, so we made it fun. So we set The Plot Against the King in medieval times with Hillary Clinton and Keeper Comey and a shifty knight who, and Devin and I in the book, set out on a quest for the truth. That's the message to the children, the power of the truth and the importance of doing the truth. So we're here at CPAC Dallas Live. We've got a whole book. I'm signing books all day. I've got a booth. The team's here from Brave Books, and it's a larger mission, Jason. You're right. Like, we had a lot of fun with writing The Plot Against the King. But we're educating children on things that matter. The First Amendment, freedom of speech, serving in government, things like that. So,
and it's actually well done.
No, thank you. So,
I mean, it's quality. That's the other thing. Because, you know,
the artwork's great.
Put a bunch of crap out there and just sell. This is actually really well done. How do people purchase it?
Go to theplotagainstheking.com. And if you're here in Dallas, come see us at the booth. We're doing pictures and signings. And it did so well, we're actually doing a second book.
Nice. There you go. Yeah. Theplotagainstheking.com. Cash Patel, thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
It's the Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Jason Rand Show.
Jason Rance has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion. Jason, definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show here in Dallas for CPAC. Early this morning, we got day two going on. We led day two with a panel. A panel that was moderated by Karina Yapor, on the topic of media bias. I was joined by Devin Nunes, who is the president and CEO of Truth Social, and Brendan Leslie, who is the editor-in-chief of The Florida Voice. I hope you enjoy.
So today, we're all suffering a spike in gas and food prices, as well as an increase in the cost of living. Inflation is the worst it's ever been, and all of a sudden, all of this is Putin's fault, or at least that's what the government and most media say. What do you think is actually causing this crisis, and why is the media not talking about it?
Well, the media is not talking about it because they generally push forward policies and politicians who are responsible for all the problems that we're currently experiencing. I think when they generally take ownership when things go right, and they love it. The media loves to say, I told you so, but when, of course, they're wrong, they will retreat. They won't talk about it. They will not be honest about it. And I think that's why, for the most part, across the board, you're seeing less interest in traditional or legacy media, less trust in it. And that's a shame, because obviously that's where I work, right? I would like everyone to be able to trust me and listen to me and hear my analysis. The difference is I provide analysis that's clearly editorial, and not necessarily just the news, and I don't merge the two, except now everyone seems to be doing that. So you don't necessarily know if you're getting analysis or you're getting the news, which is, I think, how folks like CNN, over at CNN and MSNBC, want it to be.
Of course. And speaking about the way some media handles information, Brendan, you resigned from your job as a news reporter because of the way producers handle information. Tell us about that turning point when you decided to walk away from your job security and embrace the challenge of starting a new media outlet from scratch. What is Brendan thinking through that process?
Yeah, so I worked for a CBS affiliate in Florida, and right off the bat, I was doing county politics, and where I was based, we had a really good Republican board of commissioners, and every single day, it was, how can we make this a controversy? How can we turn this story against the commissioners? How can we make this clickbait, essentially? And they spent millions in studies to show that this is what is going to get us clicks and ratings and make us money. They don't actually care about the truth. And then the other thing that I'm sure that you know, Karina, in your time in TV, what they do, all the local stations, and Jason, Devin, I'm sure you're pretty aware of this, is they just pull from CNN. They just pull stories from CNN, the producers, and they just throw it into their newscasts, and they don't check it. They just say, oh, it's CNN. It's good. And then that's on your local airwaves. It's crazy.
Yeah, it turns out they're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, we all work with the CNN news source.
Yeah.
That's the problem, pretty much. Mr. Nunes, I would like to touch on a topic you are very familiar with. For years, the media cultivated false accusations against former President Trump regarding the so-called Russian collusion. Today, we know that everything was made up. Can you elaborate on the impact of such accusations and the role the media played in spreading them?
Yeah, I think just to add what Brandon was talking about there, just so you understand, it wasn't just that CNN and the locals were pulling from CNN. You have to go up farther up the food chain, and a lot of these stories are propagated by professionals who then feed them to people at the highest levels of our government, and it pushes it all the way down to the local level. And so they're essentially propaganda operations. And once you understand that, it's a lot more liberating. So, you know, a lot of people ask, you know, how did I deal with it? Well, once I knew at the beginning of the Russia hoax that people were in on this, I just cut them off. Like, I'm probably the only politician in history to cut off the entire news media unless you weren't fake, right? So, and I continue that to today. You know, I don't talk to fake news organizations. And at Truth Social, as the CEO, you know, we've had a few fake news organizations. Actually, almost every day we get slandered or defamed. And we have to just respond through lawyers. And I think that's the only way we can treat them. And ultimately, the only way this is going to get fixed is by, number one, people joining true free speech platforms like True Social. But also, at the same time, it's going to take the courts. It's going to take people bringing cases where you are defamed and having the law enforced. It's not legal in this country to slander people. So, you know, that's what, you know, that I've been working on that for a very, very long time. And I think there's a lot of brave people that are trying to do that, to hold the news media accountable, because we really do need, we understand the left in this country. We know the damages that they will do. But one of the things we need for a successful democratic republic is you have to have a free and open media that is not working for one party. And that's really what we have. 95% of the media are basically working for one party. I mean, it'd be no different than what you see in Russia or you see in China today, where they're taking the information directly from, you know, from the propaganda machine. But then even worse than that, it's run through a funnel to everybody's phone, and it's poisoning America.
And Devin, it is important for people to make their voices heard in places where not everyone thinks the same. So what is Truth Social doing to attract people that aren't necessarily conservatives? And also, if their content does not align with conservative values, will they be censored?
Yeah, so what we're doing at Truth Social is we don't censor for political purposes. And I think also a key point is that when our timeline, we're not using an algorithm. So if you post something at 7 in the morning, and Jason posts something at 7:05, you're going to see it in that order. And I think that's really an important key. And that's the way, by the way, that how Facebook and Twitter started. So, you know, the key for us is to, you know, obviously continue, you know, to not censor for political purposes. But we also want a family-friendly atmosphere. So, you know, if you're putting up pornography, it's just not allowed on our platform, right? And especially if it's illegal pornography. If you do excessive foul language, that sort of thing, that's stuff that we don't want to see. The way I look at this is, if you can see it on your average television set, that's what we want you to see on Truth Social.
Great, thank you. So let's talk about the crisis some cities are facing right now. Jason, Defunding the police was a movement strongly publicized by some elected officials and media outlets. This led to the weakening of several police departments across the nation. What role did the media play, and do you believe they are to blame for the aftermath?
I mean, I don't think they're to blame for the aftermath. I think they're to blame for publicizing uncritically the voices that wanted to defund the police without explaining the consequences that would occur. I mean, it turns out, and I know this is going to be shocking breaking news, when you defund police and you don't have enough cops out there, bad guys take advantage. And they tend to commit more and more crimes. And you look at Seattle, for example, we're seeing a huge surge of violent crime. We're seeing assaults, we're seeing rapes, we're seeing murders in numbers that are historically, for us, unheard of, King County as a whole as well. And no one seems to be doing on the media side, with some exceptions, like myself. We're not actually talking about why this is happening, how to fix this, what caused this, and maybe a little bit of, I'm sorry, we were part of the problem. That just doesn't happen anymore.
Now Jason and I were arguing in the back over what the craziest city in America actually is. So he claims it's Seattle, but I think it still might be some places in California.
Portland. So Portland is insane. Like, they, I think, are next level crazy. I think Seattle and L.A., San Franciscans, kind of right below them.
Maybe it's all the same. All the West Coast.
It really
West
is.
Coast.
It's, yeah. It's true. Yeah, D.C. is crazy.
So I'm from California. He's from Washington. It's... filled with...
You guys should move to Florida. That's the best.
We're here. We're safe today with all of you here this morning. We feel safe. Yeah.
It's not Austin.
Well, speaking about crisis, city mayors of New York and D.C. used to promote undocumented immigration. Now they have hit the emergency button, as for the first time they are experiencing just a fraction of what southern states have been dealing with for decades. However, this double standard is not being questioned by the media. Why is this?
Because it's the truth. That's it. They just don't want the truth to get out there. Listen, what I've been doing at Florida's Voice, and Devin, when I saw that it was a funnel and that it is just pretty much propaganda, I had a 3-year contract with CBS. I was not even a year in, I quit. I didn't care. I didn't care the consequences. I walked in, I was like, I'm done. And that was it. So... I started Florida's Voice, and our mantra is real simple. It's just report the facts the mainstream media ignore. And when you do that, that's when you see results. And because we've been doing that, we've exposed CRT and nonprofits that are in our school districts. We've gotten taxpayer dollars have been pulled from those organizations after we broke those stories. We exposed a child drag show at a church in Naples, Florida, and then it got picked up by Fox News and everyone. And because of it, nearly no one went. And when you simply do that, ask the questions that lead to the truth, that's when you see real results. And that's just what we're doing. We're not pundits. We're not editorialists. We're literally just reporters, and we need more of that.
You should call yourself mainstream media.
I'm trying to.
The idea that we call out mainstream media, to me, always kind of bugs me, because I am mainstream media. I'm on a mainstream television network. I'm on a mainstream radio station. I write for a mainstream website. We can define what mainstream media is, and we shouldn't allow left-wing outlets and fringe voices define what that is.
You're listening to a special edition of the Jason Rand Show here at CPAC in Dallas. We'll continue part two of our panel on media bias when we come back. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show.
The Jason Rand Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
Part two of our panel on media bias. Again, I was joined by Devin Nunes, who's the CEO of Truth Social, Brendan Leslie, who is the editor-in-chief of the Florida Voice, and Karina Yapor. She is a news anchor who is the moderator. Enjoy.
Recently, we have seen an extreme shift in the way information is delivered by both people in power as well as in the media. Magically, a woman is no longer a woman. A recession is no longer a recession. And I could go on and on. Why is there such a strong push towards changing the meaning of fundamental terms, and how can we fight back?
Well, look, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's all about propaganda. And so when you have a successful propaganda machine, you can control the masses of people. Until The propaganda leads to bad policies that don't work. So no matter how many press conferences they do, no matter how much of the, I prefer to call the fake news instead of the mainstream media, but they can fill people's heads and poison their minds by taking all that news, funneling it into your phone, until you go in California and pay $6.50 for gasoline, or until you go into stores and they're short of supplies, or you go into, I mean, nearly everywhere I've been across America, and including in Florida, we spend a lot of time in Florida. We actually, True Social's headquartered in Florida. We actually call...
Good choice.
Sarasota is now the free speech capital of the world. It's the home of both True Social and of Rumble.
Yep.
And we chose that specifically, you know, because we looked at all kinds of different states. Obviously, President Trump has an affinity for Florida because he has properties there and golf courses there. But we thought that Florida would be the best place specifically because it's, you know, it's one of the few places where you have a long history now of good governance there, right? And thankfully, you know, this is, you know, imagine what would have happened in Florida if DeSantis wouldn't have won, right? I mean, if President Trump, you know, he got involved in that primary, he got involved in that election, and it was really Republicans working together there for what? Almost 20 years now, I think, where, and you see the difference. I mean, when you go to Florida, you just see the absolute difference. And I think that's the eye-opening for me is that you ask about, so all the propaganda in the world can't change if Jason and I are driving through San Francisco compared to driving through Tampa, Florida. I mean, it's night.
It's experience, right? I mean, in Seattle, there were a bunch of people who just flatly denied some of the reporting I was doing from the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. And they said that it was nonsense. And when I go on and I talk about homelessness, oh, you're overstating it. And then all of a sudden, folks came out of their COVID bubble in Seattle. Because, and by the way, they're still alone jogging with a mask on. That's how serious they were taking it. But they go to a park and they realize that it's been completely taken over by homeless people. You're finding used needles everywhere. And then all of a sudden, it starts to click. Oh, okay, maybe I don't want to identify with the right-wing media, but he might have a point.
Well, and so you guys know, if you're not from California or from the West Coast, but you have to understand the seriousness of this homeless problem.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not just, you guys all see this on in San Francisco, LA, the big cities, but even in my part of California, they're everywhere. In even small towns, small communities, and what started 5 or 6 years ago as one or two people being across the street from my house, you know, the church said, oh, you know, we're a church, we want to help people, which I understand that. Well, two turned to 22, 22 turned to 200, and now even in my home city, there's hundreds and hundreds of homeless walking around everywhere.
It turns out when you have a fentanyl issue that it could actually lead to homelessness, and so maybe we shouldn't be decriminalizing drugs in Washington State, in California, and elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, Jason, to our earlier point, we really do need to redefine what mainstream media is, because if we get a media that starts asking these questions, we're seeing it in Florida all the time. When we ask the real questions, I'm sure you see it, and it gets publicity and it puts the pressure on these politicians, that's when you see things starting to change. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I've been keeping a keen eye on Texas. I think you guys need more real journalism. Do you guys think we need more real journalism in Texas?
Yes.
I'm flirting with the idea of starting Texas's Voice because there's so much more that can be done. I think I should come to Texas. But there's so much more that can be done. It's just stories that are not being told.
Brandon, it's election year, a very important one. And as we know, the liberal media has an aggressive agenda. How should conservative media counter back?
They have to. So I'm really big at being the bigger person. I hate when we see people go out there and they're just trying to, like when they claim the conservative media and kind of berate the other side, just ask them simple questions. Ask them the simple questions. Hey, do you think it's appropriate for children to go to a drag show? Do you think it's appropriate that we should have our youth getting double mastectomies and being completely dismembered for gender-affirming care? Ask them those simple questions when you put it in the truth way, and they can't answer that. So I think that's going to turn a lot of voters to the other side when you just expose the truth with simple questions.
And get voters to ask those questions.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be able to book some of the Democrats who are in office because they know I might ask those kinds of questions. We have some Democrats who come on, and I'm grateful for it.
But there are a lot who definitely won't. And so that's kind of on you guys.
Yep.
When you go to town halls, when you engage with various candidates, ask these questions. And if you can, obviously record it, because then we can actually expose what it is they truly believe when they're talking to the voter that they think they're going to convince by saying, we support abortion up until the baby's first cry, which is a position that some Democrats actually take. But they won't say it that way.
And you know who? What we also need? Devin, I bet you can definitely gloat about the work that Kayleigh McEnany did as press secretary. Governor Ron DeSantis, America's governor, has an awesome press secretary, Christina Bouchaw, and the Department of Health as well, Jeremy Redfern. So a reporter reached out to them and were like, hey, we need some, we're doing a story on gender-affirming care. And the press secretary for the Department of Health returns back and he goes, wait, what is gender-affirming care? Because that's a fake word. Do you mean actually double mastectomies and stuff?
Exactly. It's not affirming. It's changing.
Yeah. So we need more press secretaries, too, that can push back and just keep getting the truth out there. It's been really effective in Florida.
We're kind of running out of time, so let's get a little bit more personal. All of you have an important role in the media. So I would like to know, starting with you, Devin, what makes you wake up early in the morning? What are you after? And what would you like to be remembered for?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because every morning I get up and I look at Truth Social and you see the difference that we're making in people's lives. It was the first time you're seeing people once again being able to express themselves. There's so many people that are on there that are like, oh, wow, I used to see you on Facebook years ago, right? And I think, and now they're back and they're talking, and you see those conversations, right? They show up in my feed. And I think that's what keeps our team at Truth Social going. I mean, the president, you know, I mean, I always tell people this, the president didn't need a new company and I didn't need a new job. Like, we are specifically doing this to open the internet back up and give the American people their voices back.
Great mission.
And, you know, and I'll tell you, you know, we should take victory laps when we get them. And this is not being reported on, but this is really important. John Rich, country music singer, he came out with a song a couple weeks ago called Progress. Not one record label would carry that song. No country music stations would play the song. He launched it on Truth Social, put the video up on Rumble, and do you know that that song was number one in the world for 2 weeks in a row?
Wow.
So it shows you that we are the majority, and just imagine, you know, like once Truth Social is approved by Google, we're now in the Google Play Store, but only for pre-order. But, you know, think about once we're able to fully be out there, people can join. It's going to make a huge, huge difference. And I think with John Rich, it just proves it with his greatest
amazing.
Hit.
That's amazing. Yeah. You guys, very quickly.
Yeah, I don't sleep, so that's part of the issue. No, I get up in the morning and I have this sick, compelling feeling to be the first person to cover an important story. And, you know, I'm lucky that I get to cover stories that I find important, and it's informed by my radio audience and my web audience. And I love that kind of freedom. So I'm the nerd who gets 1,000 documents from a public disclosure request. You're already falling asleep. But I actually go through all of it to see if there's a story here. And so if Devin ever puts in an email something he shouldn't, I'm like, ooh, I got a story. He won't do that, of course.
You know, I could talk about how I want to be remembered as my legacy as a reporter. But honestly, more than anything, I want people to see what I'm doing and hopefully be inspired and know that you're the only ones that can let yourself get canceled. I quit mainstream media, and I was the laughing stock in Florida. I had 500 followers on Facebook. You know, 2 years later, I'm over 100,000 on all my platforms now, and I have an entire team of reporters. And because I looked into the eyes of everyone, I said, no, you can't cancel me. You know, the only person I care about is God. That's the only one that I care about when it comes to my judgment of me. So what I did might have seemed crazy, but it's working. And your ideas, they might seem crazy at first. Someone might tell you they're crazy, but they're not. Follow your passion.
Absolutely. Well, as we just discussed, misleading information is as real as the impact it has on our lives. Unfortunately, it's threatening the most valuable things we have, our families, our freedom, and our democracy. So let's take a stand. Keep fighting for the values that made this country great. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us today.
Thank you.
That does it for the Jason Rand Show, day number 2 at CPAC. I'll be back in Seattle on Monday. Hope you all have a great weekend.